Hello and welcome to the latest edition of Women's Soccer Zone. My name is Kieran Tavam. Something I always forget to do is introduce myself, so thank you very much for tuning in. I'm joined, as always, by my good friend who I do remember to introduce, and that's because he's the more important of the two individuals, JJ Duke. JJ, how are you, mate?
So basically, Kieran, what you've been saying is I've been talking to an anomaly for the past 2 years. Is that correct?
Absolutely, yeah. That's exactly what I'm saying. You're the important one. I just tee you up to give the...
That's very debatable. I appreciate it.
We'll put a poll up on Twitter later, who's the most important person, and see who comes out on top. You up for it?
Yeah, sure. Hey, vote for JJ 2016. It's already better than most political candidates out there.
Yeah, mate. I'd vote for you over Donald Trump any day of the week. Let's put it that way. But on this latest edition, I was at the Women's FA Cup at Wembley on Saturday, and just gone. It was the FA Cup final between Arsenal ladies and Chelsea ladies, Arsenal coming out on top. So I have some reaction from that match from two of the winners, Kelly Smith and Dan Carter, and a very humble, gracious in defeat individual in Emma Hayes, the Chelsea ladies manager. So we're going to have a little bit of a chat about that. We'll have a quick look at what's going on in France, because once again Olympique Lyonnais have won another double, winning the French Ligue 1 and the Coupe de France. They of course take part in the UEFA Women's Champions League final next week against Wolfsburg in Italy. And we'll have a little look at the NWSL as well. JJ will have plenty to say on that, I'm sure. And one of the players that's impressed me in the early days of this season is Portland Thorns midfielder Dagny Brynjarsdóttir, a player that I've been trying to get on the show for a little while back from when she was playing for Bayern Munich. Finally, we've got her. We have a chat with her about the early stages of her career in Portland and in the NWSL. We'll also cover off anything else that comes to mind over the course of the show. So when we come back after the break, we'll have a little chat about the FA Cup final at Wembley.
Women's Soccer Zone. Follow the show on Twitter at WOSOZone.
So, welcome back. JJ, as I said in the intro, I was at the FA Cup Women's Final on Saturday at Wembley. Another record crowd to follow on from last year. Just shy of 33,000 spectators packed into Wembley. Great atmosphere, two London clubs, which I'm sure helped. Kids' entry was free, so plenty of youngsters in attendance. I was there. Did you get to watch it, and what did you make of it?
Yeah, I was able to watch a condensed highlight package. Unfortunately, I had prior obligations during that time, but with that package, I was able to watch plenty of it. And the big thing that stood out to me was how Arsenal didn't win this by four or five goals is really astonishing. They put together chance after chance after chance, especially in the first half. But that goal by Dan Carter, my goodness, that was a take.
Absolutely. I was sat right the other side of the goal from that one. And as soon as it left their boot, you could see that it was flying into the top corner. You've got a world-class keeper in Hedvig Lindahl between the posts, and she got absolutely nowhere near it, and she is in no way to blame, because the positioning of the ball into the top corner was quite unbelievable. A goal worthy of winning any final. But you're right, Arsenal had their chances. Asisat Oshoala, whose pace was a problem for Chelsea at times on Saturday afternoon, she was probably the most guilty of missing the chances. She was slipped in by Kelly Smith and missed a good chance. She had another chance in the second half, both of which showed a striker who's probably not lacking confidence, but is lacking a little bit of sharpness. She's been in and out of the team, Arsenal ladies, since joining from Liverpool. Frank Kirby had arguably Chelsea ladies' best chance in the first half. I don't know if you saw that one, but took a little bit too long to release her shot, and that allowed Sari van Veenendaal in the Arsenal goal to narrow the angle.
Yeah, well, actually, I'm going to kind of counter that a little bit, Kieran. Speaking as a goalkeeper, I question van Veenendaal's positioning on that one. She decided, instead of charging out and cutting down the angle, because her defense was there covering any sort of outlet pass. So while, yes, you could have allowed the goal mouth to be a bit more open, Van Veenendaal decided to hug that post and allow Fran Kirby to dribble in almost inside the six, and she could have done anything with that. And you're right, that was Chelsea's only legitimate chance. That needed to be buried, especially with the striker of her caliber.
Yeah, and I think that was the most surprising thing, is that if there's one player you wanted in that position, it was Fran. She is lethal in one-on-one positions. We've seen her score from those positions so many times. Just wonder if it was one of those where you're playing at Wembley, you're 1-0 down, you feel a little bit of pressure on your shoulders. It was one of those where I think 9 times out of 10 she puts that ball away. It was just that one chance and that one time that she doesn't take it, and it proves costly. And she'll bounce back from that. You know, it's one of those where she's a class player and it won't affect her. I think the only other chance that I can remember that Chelsea really had was when Ji So-yoon, or So-yoon Ji, I'm going to call her, because Hal Kaiser, our good friend from the NWSL Media Association, tells me that we're saying it wrong over here. It should be So-yoon Ji, not Ji So-yoon. So I'm going to go with So-yoon Ji. She had the volley in the second half, I think it was, that flew over the bar. And I think that was probably the only other opportunity that Chelsea had that was clear cut. And I think that's credit to Arsenal. And I think one of the things that Pedro Losa said in his post-match conference was about how the instruction to his team was press high and don't give Chelsea too much opportunity to play out of the back. And they did that superbly.
Yeah, and I think also one of the other things that for me that stood out was how inspired Kelly Smith was throughout that entire 90 minutes. Now, for many American eyes who obviously don't get the opportunity to watch the FAWSL on a weekly basis, the last time that many Americans saw her was in a boot talking about the World Cup on Fox Sports last summer. What a turnaround, obviously, that has to be for her to play so well, to set up chance after chance after chance. Obviously, it was working well with Oshuala, who, unfortunately, as you said, didn't have the best of finishing afternoons, but still, she was buzzing around that entire front line.
I think the paper that I write for, the Football League paper, described her performance as sensational. Kelly is 37 years old now, and I don't think she'll mind me saying that, being a friend of mine, but she was unbelievable on the day. She played as the most central forward player. She had Asisat Oshuala and Dan Carter either side of her, and her role was to hold the ball up and to bring those two into play, and boy did she do it. And the way that she really led that line from the front and brought other players in and really used her footballing brain, while the legs might not be there anymore, the brain is still very, very sharp. And there was a brilliant moment in the first half where she's chasing down Anna Borges, has won the ball, and then literally 90 seconds later, she's sliding a ball in for Asisat Oshuala to try and score. And unfortunately for Oshuala, she scuffed her effort. But you're absolutely right. Kelly Smith got a lot of plaudits. Dan Carter was named the official player of the match. I spoke to a lot of media, and we were pretty unanimous in agreeing that we actually thought it should have been Kelly Smith.
No, and I think you guys are right with that. And, you know, you wonder, you obviously talk about her age, and you don't know how many more miles that she has left, but if she can continue putting in performance after performance like that, she might be able to, you know, keep going for another year or two, again, with consistency like that. But it was just, it was a pleasure to watch her, not to say turn back the clock, because, again, as an American, we don't have many opportunities to watch, you know, English women's football anymore, but watching her, kind of like almost when we saw her play with Boston for those years in WPS, that it was a joy. It was truly a joy to watch.
It's interesting you say that about not having much opportunity. I had to go on radio, BBC Radio, on Sunday morning to talk about the FA Cup final, but also one of the questions they asked me is, how is the English game progressing and how does it compare to the US? Because the US is seen as the leader in women's football, in women's soccer. And one of the things that I said is that I do believe the gap is closing, but I'm interested to know what the perception is for those that do get to see or get to follow the game a little bit over here. Is there a feeling that leagues like the English League are creeping up a little bit on the US, or do you guys still very much see you as being quite far ahead and that's why you're able to attract some of the best players in the world?
You know, I'm going to have to pass on that question purely for the fact that, again, the exposure of one league is far superior than the other, purely because, again, you have the simple concept of every NWSL match is played on YouTube. Now, obviously, all the Twitters out there beleaguer and moan sometimes, oh my God, the camera angle's not great, or the commentators aren't that good. Well, guess what, folks? You don't have to pay for a single match the entire season. You can watch it on archive. You can watch matches whenever you want, whether it's live or, you know, a couple of weeks from then. I, as an American who would want to watch the FAWSL, where can I go to watch other than trying to find an illegal stream every once in a while for the few games that are on television? You can't. So I think I don't have enough, you know, for me, experience of watching the FAWSL to give a proper answer to that question, because the exposure. And that's why players, I guess to maybe answer the question a little bit, players would want to be seen on a weekly basis as opposed to going somewhere else where you don't have many eyes.
No, it's a fair comment. I guess that's why I'm in a better position to be able to make that judgment, because I do get to see both leagues. So I know it's difficult for you guys. But yeah, in my view, English league definitely progressing, still behind the US, and I was quite happy to say that on the radio. But definitely the gap is closing in certain areas. I think when you look at 33,000 people packed into Wembley, that attendance is phenomenal, and it would be nice to get that every week, but the reality is that we're not, and there's still some catching up to do. But as I mentioned, managed to get some reaction from the FA Cup final. So I think what we'll do is, mate, rather than do one interview chat, we'll play them back to back. So you'll hear from Kelly Smith and Dan Carter from Arsenal Ladies, but first we will bring you Emma Hayes, who, as I said, very humble, very gracious in defeat. So here she is, followed by Kelly and Dan.
No, I don't think so. I think congratulations to Arsenal. It was a fantastic performance and a reminder of how it is about a single game. You know, it's not about, you know, accumulation of games against each other. It's not about previous histories. It's not even about recent form. It's about showing up and putting in the performance. And I thought Arsenal did that today. You know, they dominated in the first half, particularly the first and second ball moments. And as we know in football, you know, that's what usually gives you a heads up. Half-time, shuffled it about. I thought we were better once Neve come into the game. Unfortunately, she'd been out for 6 weeks, so we haven't had the luxury to start with her. But once we played a little higher up the pitch, we slowly came into the game, created some chances. And as you know, it's not always about, you know, having a million chances. It's about having the right one. And we had one or two, perhaps, where we could have capitalised on it, but I have no complaints about the result.
Frustrating not to test the keeper more.
Well, when you look at our attacking talent and you look at, you know, the goals that we've scored so far, there'll be some disappointed heads in the dressing room, because, you know, when you're working hard as a coach on the touchline to keep moving things around to try and create opportunities for the team, you know that you're doing that because we're struggling to carry out the game plan. And that's what we did. You know, when we reflect on that as a team tomorrow, I will remind the players of what the game plan was and how often it is we did what we wanted them to do. But that's a credit to Arsenal. They put us under a lot of pressure. They pressed us high in our half. And I think, you know, they got their just reward for that. I'm not surprised. No, they've probably got, you know, the largest player budget in the country. So to acquire 18 players of their calibre and still have the luxury to put Kelly Smith and leave Jodie Taylor out of a 16, then, you know, that says something about the quality they have at their possession. But as I keep reminding the group, just because we were in possession of the trophy, everybody's hungry to take it, and it's not a given that you're gonna earn that just because we are the top team in the country. You have to fight for that. And I felt at times we didn't quite have as much fight as we needed for the duration. And sometimes that comes from being too comfortable. Sometimes it comes from complacency. Sometimes it comes from just not doing what we expect of the players. But look, you know, I can't sit here 12 months ago, or not even 12 months ago, and enjoy the moments of winning without being gracious in defeat. But equally, know that, you know, I am a leader that will put the team in the best possible position, and then they will reflect and learn on what has been a disappointing day for the club.
Do you feel that the players
players will learn more from today's defeat than maybe if they had won the trophy again?
Well, I think everybody accepts in this room that women's football today isn't what it was 10 years ago. And the days of Arsenal ladies dominating trebles and quadruples, thank goodness, is a day of the past, because it wasn't a competitive league. Now, you know, one of a number of teams could be in a position to win games. And I've said before, the likelihood of trophies flipping between three, four, maybe five clubs as it progresses is high. So disappointed to be able to win the FA Cup for a second season running, in my opinion, would have been as big an achievement as getting the quadruple when I was at Arsenal, because that's how much harder it is to win trophies.
What are the positives that you'll take away from today's game?
Well, it's always positive. There's almost 34,000 people here. The women's game's growing. I'm no longer talking to one journalist after the game. You know, the pain of defeat is going to be felt much more in the morning, because I'm visually and orally going to have to experience that. Well, I probably won't. I'll shut the whole world down tomorrow. But, you know, on the positive note, people are talking about it. And as I've always said, I'm here to grow the women's game. Yes, I'm the manager of Chelsea. So for me to look around and see scores of, oh, I don't even say little girls anymore, scores of fans, whomever they are, coming in to support the game, then I'm proud of the work that we're doing to make sure that we keep growing our game at the same level.
Congratulations on the win.
Thank you.
Talk us through it.
Where do I start? I think from the first minute, all our players are on it, mentally focused, ready, driven. We had a game plan. I think we nailed it the first 30 minutes. Chelsea come into it a little bit of the later part of the second half. But because we performed so well the first 20 minutes, I think a confidence grew and we realised that, OK, today could be our day.
And Hayes said to me last week, Kelly was born to play at Wembley. What was it like out there?
Yeah, it's phenomenal. This is, you know, the one stadium that you really want to be involved in, and a great occasion, FA Cup, record crowd. It was a phenomenal experience. You know, you look around and you see the whole lower bowl full. The grass is immaculate. If you can't play on that, you can't play on anything. But I was just really proud of the players today. We turned up. We struggled early in the league campaign, as you know. Losing to Chelsea last a couple of weeks ago, 2-0. And then obviously Man City away. So we're losing to probably the two teams that are in amongst us. So I think today we've showed that we can turn up on the big occasion, play extremely well, and now we need to take that confidence and performance and belief into our league campaign.
And a great goal from Dan as well. I mean, you scored in quite a few finals. What was that goal like? It was really special.
Yeah, that's why she put Pedro put her out on the left, for her to cut in and whip balls in, whether it's a cross or a shot, and I think she saw the goalie kind of off her line and then dinked it over. It was a great goal. What an occasion to do it on, in front of the big crowd and FA Cup final. She was definitely the hero for me.
Massive difference to one or two recent performances. I had five changes from the last game, but what was the big difference today?
I think we said it in the changing room at the before the game. We have to start well and get in their faces and high pressurise, and when we get the ball, be calm and composed and keep it and switch the point of attack. And we certainly did that. We've got Asisat Oshirola that's phenomenal in terms of her pace in behind, and we knew that. We knew it was a bigger pitch, so we had to get her out on the wing and maybe expose her pace on that front. But we were just hungry for it today. I think, you know, our build up, our road to this was a. It's kind of written in the stars, because, you know, it's a close game against Birmingham. We beat them on penalties. Notts County beat them on penalties. Probably shouldn't have actually won the game. Ellen White got sent off, and it kind of gave us momentum in that game. And then Sunderland going down to 10 players, and then we been beating them quite comfortably. So for me today, looking at this game, if our players were mentally right, I kind of believe that we could win.
Kelly, you mentioned that, well, you kind of implied there that Arsenal went a little bit more direct today than we usually see. Was that a deliberate tactic, and do you think it caught Chelsea by surprise?
Yeah, to be honest, I wasn't sure whether I'd be involved in the squad, because the last two league games I've been left out and in the stands. So it kept me on my toes a little bit, and got me questioning. But when Pedro said, you know, you've got the nod to start, to hold the ball up, I think it helps because then other players can be brought into play. And I think sometimes when I play, it gives the team a little bit more confidence that I'm on the pitch. So I just try to run and hold the ball up and, you know, do as much as I could for my team. So I'm really thrilled.
It's the FA Cup final. It's the game that you always turn it on. What is it about? Well, what is the secret?
I don't know. It's like an Arsenal thing. When we play the FA Cup final. Oh, for me? Well, I don't think I played amazing today. I think I did my job. I don't know. It's just the big occasion. You just want to go out and help your team win. Mentally, I'm in a good place. Physically, I'm in a good place. And I think the players, my teammates, give me a lot of confidence, you know, just saying that they wanted me to start. And it's glad that I'm on the pitch, and after the game, I'm still one of the best players in the world. It's like I'm on cloud nine right now, you know, fifth FA Cup, playing at Wembley, just buzzing right now.
If you think about the last year that you've had and come back from injury again, yeah. Does it make it all the more sweeter?
Yeah.
Did you think this would happen?
No, I didn't, no, because obviously after the injury that I had sustained last year, I was kind of questioning whether that would be it for me. But I've kind of had this fighting mentality where the experience that I've had with my injuries, I know I can get back for it, so I've really pushed myself, but took my time at the same time and thought, you know, I was so nervous again when we played Birmingham on the bench because I couldn't control any of the game. So when you're on the pitch, it's a lot easier to play and have confidence.
How important was the win in terms of the rest of the season, Co? It's been a little bit indifferent so far. It's been a really good performance against a team who haven't lost, I think it's since October against Wolfsburg.
Yeah, they're a great side, but we stopped them playing today, and that was key. You know, we stopped their key players, Karen Carney, Frank Kirby, Gemma Davison coming into it at the end, 10 minutes. Jusso Young was quiet, but that's due to our mentality and us high-pressing them and making them feel very uncomfortable.
Can you say that was Arsenal's best performance of the season?
Yeah, massively, yeah. We all turned up today. I think the pitch helped us. I'm not sure Boreham Wood is... you know, it's a little bit bumpy. Sometimes it takes one or two touches to get the ball under control, and then the high press hits you. But this pitch, when you split a lot of space, our players are quite technical and confident that it's easier for us.
Kelly, do you feel a bit of pressure today? You got the start, obviously, and you got young forwards either side of you. Do you feel that other pressure with Wembley as well?
No pressure. Fun. Just go out and smile, have fun.
Do you enjoy that sort of being the sort of focal point of the attack and looking to you as a leader?
Yeah, I think it's part of who I am. It's how I play. Players look to me to lead by example, and I've done that my whole career, so it's no different for me playing today. I just, you know, said to the players, it's just another game. You know, it's just Wembley, but we've played this game thousands of times. It's just another game, so we need to perform today and bring this trophy.
That's not bad, is it?
I mean, just to play at Wembley was going to be a dream come true. To score, for us to win the game is ridiculous.
We heard that you were played out there almost to specialise in cutting in from there, curling in from there. Talk us through the goal.
Ball over the top. I know if I got cut in and if I could get a shot off, it was going to test her, and hope it went in, didn't it? So it done all right.
The team started really well, but you particularly stood out and started well. Did you feel any nerves, or was it adrenaline, or were you really focused?
I was saying I'm really focused. Obviously, I was nervous before the whistle goes, but as soon as that happens, get your first touch, you forget where you are, so to speak, even though there's 30-odd thousand. But yeah, you just ease into the game, let your ability do the talking.
You had a great final against Devon a few years ago. Was it different because it was Wembley?
Obviously, FA Cup final, wherever you're playing, it's always the big one in women's football. Everyone's always watching it. It's always attracts a massive crowd. So wherever it is, it's always special. But to be at Wembley is...
Danny, when you and I spoke last week, we spoke about you making the number 7 role of your own in the Arsenal team. So how surprised were you when Pedro told you to play on the left today?
When Pedro told me I'm playing left back, goalkeeper, it doesn't really bother me. As long as I'm on the pitch and I can do a job for the team, right or left, it's the same role. So it's different.
And how did that last 10 minutes feel on that big pitch, holding on to a 1-0 lead?
Yeah, I was struggling, cramping up, but no, we had to put everything into that, and then we can enjoy the celebrations and the memories.
How important today, Dan, was the performance of your team off the ball as well as on it? Because you pressed Chelsea in high areas, didn't give them a lot of time on the ball. How key was that, do you think, to the win today? And how much did Pedro emphasise that?
It was massive. We knew that they had strong attacking players, so we knew we had to double up. We had to just confine them in tight areas, and we just knew what we had to do. Everyone done their job, so I'm really proud of the whole team as a collective. Substitutes, squad players, staff, everybody involved. It was a great, it was a good day.
And how big is it that on the today of all days that you turn up and you really put a performance like that? I've been to a lot of your home games this year. It's been a bit indifferent, but today everything went right.
Yeah, we knew today's a one-off game. This is the big one. It didn't matter about how we're getting on the league because it's a one-off game. I'm just happy that we pulled through and it's going to be a good night for us.
Women's Soccer Zone would like to thank our partners, She Kicks Magazine. Subscribe at shekicks.net for even more women's football.
So that was reaction from the FA Cup. JJ, I'm not going to go into too much depth in the FAWSL because we've spoken quite a lot about English football with the FA Cup, but Chelsea ladies and Man City ladies undefeated, 100% record so far. We've talked a lot about Arsenal. They've already dropped points. Everyone behind Chelsea and Man City have dropped points. Even at this early stage of the season, it looks like it could be a two-horse race.
Yeah, I think that goes really to the money that was spent by both of those teams in the offseason. You look at some of the players that were brought in, especially by Man City, and you know, I think personally just pointing the finger at bringing in Kosa Solani, I mean, that's a big signing to get her to come to Manchester City. That's a name player that you have with a team that's already loaded in a fair few directions. That explains why City is there. For Chelsea, again, they're the holders. Good performance, but just not enough to win the cup this year. But obviously have had success in the last couple of years. They have a team that's also very well-known. Lots of domestic internationals playing on that team on a weekly basis. And then obviously So-Yun-Ji, I'm going to go ahead and use the proper name that Hal Kaiser is said to use. You can't beat those two teams right now. You can maybe get a result on a given day, but to go out and consistently and have teams like those lose points, that you don't really see that happening.
No, agreed. And I think it's fair to say as well that while Chelsea and Man City have spent money, Arsenal spent money as well. It's fair to say that they brought in a lot of high-profile players. When you look at the likes of Asisat Oshoala, Jodie Taylor, who hasn't even kicked a ball yet, and I understand that she is now pretty much ready to make her first appearance for the club. Josephine Henning, who a German international who's played for Wolfsburg and PSG. I'm not sure what they're paying their players, but she wouldn't have come cheap, I'm sure. And they're bringing a lot of experience. And Arsenal, they were brilliant in the FA Cup final, but their league form has been, I have to say, disappointing. I do think that Pedro Losa is probably in a position at the moment where he doesn't know what his best 11 is. He has chopped and changed the team around. He's had players that would be probably good enough to get in most first 11s, not even making the bench. So I think he's got a problem there. He's gone from a squad where it was thin on the ground. He had problems with injuries last year, and that hurt them. So he's brought in a lot of players, and now he's in a position where he's almost got too many. And that's, I think, probably hampering him a little bit. But it's not over. But I do think that it's now a two-horse race between Chelsea and Man City. But as I said, I don't want to talk too much about the WSL. We've spoken a lot about English football. We're going to move on briefly to what's going on in France. Now, as expected, Lyon continued to dominate. Lyon continued to win trophies. And since our last show, they've won two of them. They've clinched the league title. And this past weekend, they won the Coupe de France after beating Montpellier 2-1. Now, we know that we're used to seeing them dominate. But a 2-1 win over Montpellier, I think it was Louise Nassib with a goal in the 86th minute. At least that one was competitive. But I know that you were saying before recording that you wonder just how anyone is going to beat that Lyon team domestically, because what we can say since the last show and in the last few days, or the last week at least, Lyon, yes, we know they're going to lose Amandine Henry to Portland in America in the NWSL, but they have made up for that with the signing of Caroline Sager. They have agreed to sign Jessica Houara, both from PSG, and a third player from PSG they are bringing in is Kira Hamrui. Now, not only are they free players that are joining Lyon, but they are free players that they are taking away from their main rivals, PSG, who incidentally themselves have replaced Farid Benstiti for next season with none other than former Olympic Lyonnais coach Patrice Lair. He's got a hell of a job on his hands having lost those three players. But if you add Marijan to the fact of those three players as well, that Lyon team looks even more ridiculous next year than it does this.
I mean, you kind of look at that team right now and it's, where are the weak links? Okay, we're going to answer that question. There are none. So the second question is, how are you going to keep all of those players happy with playing time? Because let's face it, I mean, you can rotate almost, Kieran, two different 11s and probably have the same, if not better, success than what they're already going for. I mean, how you talked about earlier in the show with Arsenal about, you know, they may have too many riches at their disposal right now. Well, what do you say for Lyon? I mean, you have a season that's already 22 matches long. Okay, that's great. Then you throw in cup matches, it's a few more, Champions League, that's another handful more. Where are you going to get all these players playing time? Because eventually, sure, winning's nice and all, but some of those players may be losing their, you know, consistency, which then can lose out national team spots, which can then, you know, who knows what happens. But I guess in terms of Lyon, what, they've conceded only 3 goals this year. They've scored 114. That's like, who's going to beat them? No one.
It sounds ridiculous when you say it out loud, doesn't it? 114, 4 and 3 against. I just wonder if there's something that we don't know that they do. When you look at, they lost last year, they lost one or two, didn't they? And then they brought in Claire Lavoisier and they brought in Mbok Barty. I do wonder if some of those players are possibly on their way out. If you look at Jessica Houara plays at right back, that could mean an end for Corinne Petit. There have been rumours potentially Louisa Nassib might look for a new challenge elsewhere, and media reports in Sweden earlier in the year suggested that Lotta Schelin is potentially looking at moving back to Sweden. If that's not this summer, potentially it could be next. And maybe they know something we don't. Maybe there could be a few outs as well and they're simply preparing early to replace them. Caroline Sager is the natural replacement for Amandine Henry. I am interested to see where Jennifer Marijan fits in that team, because there's so much attacking talent there already. The way that I see it, potentially, Marijan is that replacement for Nassib if she decides to leave. I'm not saying that she is, but as I say, there have been a few rumours. But I do wonder what Patrice Lair's thinking, taking on that challenge. But I guess if any team's going to overthrow Lyon, it's going to be someone who knows them better than anyone.
No, you're right. And I think that's almost kind of one of those things where in America, in the National Football League, you have this waiver system. And it's always funny, whenever a team waives a specific player, it's going to probably be like an offensive or defensive lineman. But who goes and picks them up? The team that's going to be playing the team that just waived that player the following week. So they get to use all the tricks, or find out all the tricks of the trade, learn the secrets, and try to establish that. Now, granted, of course, the NFL, that's a week-by-week basis. This could be a year-by-year project, but still, you're right, it's one of those, if you can't beat them, join them type things. But if you're PSG, you're thinking, well, if you can't beat them, find someone that knows how to beat them.
Yeah, 100%. I think it'll be fascinating next year, or I certainly hope it will be anyway. We've talked about Lyon a lot. We've talked about what's going on in France. They obviously play Wolfsburg in the UEFA Women's Champions League final. We'll have a preview coming up for that final beforehand. But we'll go over to Wolfsburg's home country, of course, Germany, and speak to Jasmina Schweimler about the conclusion of the German domestic season. So for this part of the show, we're joined by Jasmina Schweimler to talk about what is going on in the Frauen-Bundesliga. Jasmina, how are you?
I'm doing great. Happy to be back.
We're glad to have you back. So I guess the best place for me to kick off is, since we last spoke, Bayern Munich have clinched their second Frauen-Bundesliga in a row. The question I'd have based on that is, two league titles back to back, are they now, in your view, becoming the big team in Germany? Have they overtaken the likes of Wolfsburg and Frankfurt?
As much as I would like to say yes, I don't think they are the biggest team, because obviously winning the Bundesliga is impressive, but the way they played in the Champions League, it wasn't that impressive. So to be the biggest team in Germany, I think you have to be present international and play well, represent the country well, but they didn't do that. So I don't think they are the best team yet. But we don't know. We have to wait for the next season and see if they do better.
And do you think that they can do better in the Women's Champions League next year? We've seen that they've signed Simone Lauder from FFC Frankfurt for next season. Do we expect them to do better based on the squad that they will have next year?
Oh, absolutely. They have to do better. It would be disappointing if they don't.
Okay. Well, we mentioned Wolfsburg. They went into the last game of the season needing to beat FC Köln, and they managed to do that. It meant that they finished second. How important was it, in your view, to qualify through the league and not have to worry about winning against Lyon next week, which of course they will want to do, but they can now go into that game knowing that they've already qualified and it might take a little bit of pressure off them?
Yeah, well, Ralf Kellermann said ahead of the game that the game against Köln is probably the most important game of the season, because even if they win against Lyon, it doesn't guarantee them a spot for the Champions League next season. So it was definitely the most important thing to qualify again. It was actually the main goal for the season, to qualify again, since they obviously didn't win the Bundesliga.
And we mentioned Lyon. How confident are Wolfsburg going into that final? Have you seen any media or quotes where, you know, they're saying how they're feeling going into that game next week in Italy?
They seem very confident, and they can be proud of how they bounced back in 2016. We already talked about how they struggled in 2015, you know, a lot of individual mistakes. So they improved that. Every player has improved. Yeah, they can be very confident and proud of themselves, and let's see what happens.
Well, one team that obviously we've mentioned over the course of the season, they did make it through to the semi-finals of the Champions League, is FFC Frankfurt. We've seen in the last few weeks that Jennifer Marajan is departing to go to Lyon, and we've mentioned that Simone Lauder is going to Bayern Munich. Should Frankfurt fans be worried next year, because that team is being ripped apart from the one that we recognised that won the Champions League last year?
Well, officials have already said that they don't believe that they will play international the next few seasons. They are actually planning to rebuild and reorganise the squad with young talents.
Now, looking at now the end of the season has occurred, who are the clubs that are coming up? Who are the clubs that are going down? And how do you think the teams coming up will perform?
That's actually something I have to correct from our last episode, because for some reason I thought that FC Lübers are going to get promoted again. That's not the case. We have Borussia Mönchengladbach coming up and MSV Duisburg, who most Bundesliga fans are very familiar with. They used to be FCR Duisburg, and they have... Do you know Inka Grings?
Yes, we know Inka Grings well.
Do. Yeah. So she's the coach, and they haven't lost a single game in the season. So they are very confident, and I'm very much looking forward to seeing them play in the Bundesliga again.
And we lose FC Köln and Werder Bremen, is that right?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay. And final question. We saw Turbine Potsdam legend Bernd Schroeder retire at the end of the season. 45 years as a manager, took charge of his first game in 1971. What legacy does he leave behind, and how did Turbine Potsdam go about replacing him?
Without Bernd Schroeder, the sport wouldn't be where it is right now. He kind of shaped it. Without him, you know, there wouldn't be Turbine Potsdam, who were the first real women's soccer club in Germany, I think, that went on their own. And as far as I know, Matthias Rudolph is going to take over. He has been the assistant coach this season, so he knows the players, he knows how they work, how they play. it's going to be interesting to see how well he does next season.
Well, definitely. I think they finished seventh in the league, and that was the first time that Bernd Schroeder had finished outside the top six. So not quite how he would have wanted it to end, I'm sure. But as you said, someone who's left a very, very important mark on German women's football. Well, Jasmina, thank you very much for joining me. The end of the Frauen-Bundesliga. So we will probably not speak to you now for a few weeks because we have the Champions League final coming up. So I will no doubt get you on after that. But enjoy the Champions League final. I know as a Wolfsburg fan, you will be gunning for the team to win that match over Lyon. But have a good one. Thank you very much. And we'll speak soon.
Thanks for having me.
Women's Soccer Zone. Listen to the show on Audioboom or download via iTunes. Just search for Women's Soccer Zone.
So that was Jasmina. JJ, we move on to your bread and butter, my bread and butter, lots of people's bread and butter, the NWSL. Lots going on, poor refereeing, lots of assists for Tobin Heath, then a red card. It's all kicking off there, mate.
Yeah, it is. We're at the quarter turn to the season, believe it or not already. Game five, obviously what you're referencing to, the Tobin Heath picking up the two yellows, poor refereeing that comes down to the Seattle Reign Portland Thorns derby match this past weekend. You really kind of described it well. It was a pretty ugly match to watch in the second half. Lots of hard fouls. Two goals split evenly, one of them for Portland. That was kind of off of a miscue by Lauren Barnes and Hope Solo just looking at each other and allowing Nadia Nadim to slip in, and then Bev Yanez picking up the equalizer a couple minutes later off of a set piece. But yeah, that wasn't the prettiest match to watch, and one that's kind of a showcase for this league. And they're definitely not that they need to win more viewers, but they didn't win any by the match that was played.
I saw some of the reaction after the game, and I think someone said both coaches were mutually disappointed with the refereeing. When both coaches are disappointed, it usually suggests that something's wrong. Now, refereeing is something that is contentious, not just in the US. We have the same problem over here in England. I'm sure there are people who are disappointed with the standard in Europe. But this is a problem now, isn't it? Because if coaches are coming out and being quite open about their disappointment, it puts pressure on referees, and usually pressure results in more mistakes rather than an improvement.
Yeah, no, it does. And it's not like they're getting referees from the local leagues. These are professional referees under, you know, it's called PRO, Professional Referee Organization, the same organization that disperses out the men's referees. So obviously it's not the same referees, but still it's the same organization. So these are supposedly the best of the business. They didn't get it done on Sunday. Now, again, I can't really say much because I've never been a referee before, never been in that situation. You know, obviously these are the people that the organization believes they're qualified. So everyone has a bad game. We'll hopefully just kind of leave it at that. And, you know, we just have a better show of it in the following weeks.
Well, let's look at the positives. Don't want to focus too much on the negative stuff like refereeing. Let's look at the actual league itself. Washington Spirit, top of the table at time of recording. 5 games, 4 wins and a tie. They look very good at the moment, don't they? And I think many of us expected them to do well. I know that when I did my predictions, I had them finishing runners-up to Seattle, who currently lie in fifth. But Washington have been solid, haven't they? They've been good.
They've been good. And the thing that's really stood out to me, Kieran, is that they found more ways to score goals. It's not just Crystal Dunn scoring all goals. Who would have thought that Joanna Lohman would be tied for the team lead in goals scored through 5 games? Certainly not myself, but they found more avenues to create chances. The team is deeper. They've also kind of put together that defensive mentality that's so known under Jim Gabara, where you're not going to give up a whole lot of chances, so as long as you get one or two and you cash in, you're going to be perfectly fine. Obviously, Stephanie LeBay now knows that If she continues to play well with Aaron McLeod getting injured earlier this year, that number one jersey for the Olympics could be hers. So she has to go out and prove it, and I think everything's working out right for them.
It's interesting. You say it's not just Crystal Dunn scoring the goals. Correct me if I'm wrong. I don't think Crystal Dunn's got any goals for Washington this season at the moment, but certainly good that players around her are scoring. Now, Chicago Red Stars had that surprise defeat on the opening day of the season to Houston. They've looked good since, won three and drawn one since that defeat. Portland are ticking along nicely. I think we said in the last episode that they weren't pulling up any trees, but they'd been and had some solid results, and I would maintain that. I think they've had solid results. I don't think they've been amazing, but I think they continue to pull results out of the bag. Orlando Pride. Now, when a new franchise comes into the league, as we saw with Houston, it could go probably one way or the other, where they make an early impression and then possibly fall away, or they struggle to start with and probably struggle throughout. I have to give credit to the Orlando Pride and Tom Samani, because the fact that they have three wins from five games, yes, those three wins have all come at home, I think they've looked good, and they've probably hit the ground running certainly a lot quicker than the Houston Dash did when they had their first season.
Yeah, no, you're right. And it's one of those things I've had conversations with people about. You know, you look at that 11, the starting 11 that Sermani will march out, that is a strong team coming in. I mean, you have internationals littered throughout the lineup. You have Alex Morgan, obviously, who, if she's fit, and she's fit right now, she's scoring goals. Case in point, this past weekend in their 1-0 win over Western New York, it's a Kristen Edmonds ball clipped over the top. Alex runs onto it and loops it over Sabrina D'Angelo for a world-class goal. So if she's scoring, things are working. Now, the question to watch, Kieran, in the next few weeks is, as we get closer and closer to the Olympics, there are a good number of players that could potentially be missing time due to the Olympics. Now, where are they going to plug the holes? That's going to be something to watch for. So it's a good start right now, but if they don't hold on to this pace and then they have the Olympics, they're probably going to be going into that first category you said of an expansion team where they start off strong but then fade away towards the end.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. And I think the Olympics and player availability is going to be key for everyone, but Orlando especially, being a new franchise, I think it could hit them as hard as anyone. Now, I'll make a note of the teams that we haven't spoken about in depth and make sure that we cover them in the next show. So that will be the Seattle Reign, Sky Blue, Houston, and a couple of others. But I do want to finish off with the Boston Breakers, who, after five games, are on five losses, no goals for, and seven against. Now, Matt Beard, I've spoken to him a couple of times before and during the season, and he was under no illusion to the challenge that faced him. But what positives, if any, can we draw from the Breakers? Because it's a very difficult campaign for them. It's going to take him time. We spoke about it on the last episode that it might not be next year, that they might not be this year. Well, it doesn't look like it's going to be this year. It might not be next year, but give him time. He could well get it right in a couple of years' time. But are there any positives that we can take from Boston at the moment?
Would you like me to be honest?
Yeah, absolutely.
Zero. I don't see, outside of the fact that they've played competitively over their last three matches, that's great. This is a results business. You have to get results. The positive is that they're selling out all their matches. That's at home. That's phenomenal. But you have to start giving those fans something to cheer about. Now, again, as you said, Matt Beard knows that this is a rebuilding process. This is not a year one or a year two where they're going to have success in getting to the postseason. That's fine. But at the same time, you'd have liked to see something going forward. You haven't yet. Unfortunately, you had, after a bright start by Abby Smith, she goes and tears her ACL and she's out for the season now. So that's not helping in the back. Obviously, Libby Stout, I feel, was kind of left hung out to dry on a few occasions. So, you know, she'll have a go at it. And again, you can't really fault her on the goal that was conceded in a 1-0 loss to Sky Blue. It was a bad deflection that ends up beating her. Otherwise, they're okay. But you have to start wondering at this point now, Kieran, we're in week six, if they don't get a goal, nonetheless a result, a goal, there is going to be some issues.
Yeah, because you can't win games without scoring goals. Granted, you can't lose them if you're not conceding, but I guess the one positive I take from it, I've seen a few of their games, is that they're not getting battered, with the exception of the home game against Seattle. It's single goal defeats, isn't it? It's 4-1-0s and 3-0 against Seattle. So they're not getting hammered, but granted, a lot of those games, or the majority of them, were at home. So they now have some difficult road games to come, and it's going to be interesting to see how they face up to that challenge. I said I was going to finish on Boston. I guess one of the things they'll probably feel is there's a lot of focus on Boston because they haven't won a game yet. But probably more surprisingly, neither have AFC Kansas City. Yes, they've got 2 points on the board, but they're no wins from five as well.
Yeah, no, you're right on that. FC KC. Now, while the Boston issue is clear, but they need to execute, the FC KC issue is clear, but they need to get it. Kieran, they need a forward. They don't have, outside of Shea Groom, they don't have a true forward that is durable. Or at least go get yourself a couple of forwards that, you know, if, okay, this week forward A starts, forward B sits. The next week forward B starts, forward A sits. There's nothing that's really going for them there. And now Jen Puskowski announces that she's retiring and has actually just played her last match. To go to physical therapy school, which, you know, congratulations to her for an absolutely phenomenal career, a longevity playing in both the WPS and NWSL. And I believe, if my memory serves me correct, she played in that WPSL elite season. So that's, what, 7 consecutive years?
Yeah, credit to her. Seconded.
That's phenomenal in this era. Okay, so now what do? You've got to go get yourself something. And I don't see, they haven't made any moves yet at the time of this recording, but if they don't make any moves by the start or the beginning of the next round, then you have to question what's going to happen.
Yeah, absolutely. And second in on Jen Buzkowski, I think she's been phenomenal, a great competitor and a player that I'll certainly miss watching in the league. Now, I said that I'd missed out a couple of teams, and one of those was Portland Thorns. Now, I mentioned Tobin Heath, who was named the player of the month for the opening month of the season, deservedly, with the assists that she gave. But I wanted to talk to one of her teammates, Dagny Brynja's daughter, who I wanted to get on the show for a little while. Tried to get her when she was at Bayern. Unfortunately, that didn't work out, but I have managed to get her now. Wanted to talk about how she's settling into the team, talk a little bit about Tobin Heath and those assists. So here's Dagny giving a bit of insight into her time at Portland. Okay, so for this episode of Women's Soccer Zone, I've been trying to get her on the show for quite some time. Tried to get her while she was at Bayern Munich, but they were not, unfortunately, as accommodating as the Portland Thorns have been. Yes, I've got Icelandic midfielder Dagny Brynja's daughter. Dagny, how are you?
I'm good, thank you.
Good, I'm glad. So, a new venture for you into the NWSL. Obviously, played your college career over at Florida State. Very successful career over there. We'll talk about that shortly. But how are you settling into life in Portland? 5 games gone at the time of recording. A couple of goals for you. How are you enjoying your time there so far?
I'm enjoying everything so far. The sun is finally out. I really love the sun, so I like that. I'm getting to know my teammates on and off the field, so that's getting better. And yeah, I have 2 goals in 5 games, but I think I can definitely play better. I'm still like getting used to the players I'm playing with and the style and moving into different position. So yeah, I'm enjoying everything so far, but I still know I can play better. So hopefully when the season goes on, I will more like show the better side of me.
The opening game was given quite a lot of publicity, and there was a lot of eyes on that opening match because you were at home, new head coach, lots of new players, but you were also playing against a new franchise in Orlando Pride, Alex Morgan coming back to Portland immediately after leaving the team as well. How did you feel about that one? You obviously scored in that game, but how did you feel going into that first match?
I was just really excited. I love when we have a lot of people in the stands and playing there, like at the stadium we always, like we train on every day. and having all these people around us, it felt like we have an extra player on the field. They give us so much energy. And yeah, I was excited to play against Orlando. Obviously, I played in Florida for 4 years, so I was excited to play against three of like former Florida State players. So I was excited to see them and play against them, and yeah, just like excited to go on the field and play. And obviously, I was really excited also to see like the atmosphere on the field. I've heard a lot about it. And like in the national anthem, they had some fireworks, and I just thought it was awesome. I've never seen anything in women's soccer like that. So I just hope in the future, women's soccer will be that big.
Was it bigger and better than you had expected and that you'd heard, or was it pretty much what you'd been advised and what people had spoken to you about?
No, it was definitely bigger. Like I had heard a lot, so I was kind of imagining how it would be, but it was definitely bigger than I expected.
And the roar when you scored your goal, that must have been pretty special, one that you probably won't forget.
Yeah, that was really exciting. And obviously, like, every player likes to score a goal, but I'm just happy, like, we won and got 3 points. I think that's the most important thing.
Talk to me about the players that you got around you. I know you're still new to the team. There's a lot of new players within that roster. You've got the likes of Lindsay Horan around you, young players like Lindsay Horan and Emily Sonnet. Then you've got experienced internationals with lots of quality, the likes of Megan Klingenberg and Tobin Heath, who won Player of the Month for the opening month of the competition. Tell me about how you're settling in around those sorts of players.
Yeah, obviously this is my first time playing with them, but I knew Emily Sonnet because I played against her for 4 years, so I kind of knew her more, like her strengths and weaknesses and stuff like that. But it's been fun, like playing with so many big names and so many great players. They obviously make me better and help me to improve as a player, and I'm still like getting used to playing with them, just like how, like reading their passes and all that. And now when Sinclair is back, I really like playing around her because she's more like centrally and like attacking as well. So I really like playing with her and like learning from her. Obviously, she's like has a lot of experience.
And talk to me about Tobin Heath. Assisted every one of the Thorns' goals in the opening month. She was on form, wasn't she?
Yeah, she's just a great player, and her technique and like her ability to beat players on 1v1 is just awesome. And yeah, her passing play with like her right and left foot are just like awesome. I didn't even know. I think I asked her maybe 1 month in the season, like, if she was left or right footed, like I couldn't even tell. So I just, that's like a amazing ability to be both footed, and yeah, her free kicks and corners and all that are just great. It doesn't matter which foot she kicks it with.
Team's doing well at the moment, undefeated at the time of recording. Is the team ahead of where you were expecting them to be, or were you always hopeful that you'd be able to start the season as well as you have done?
I think our goal was always to start well. Obviously, we would want more wins. We have a few draws. But I think we're still like getting used to playing against each other and like trying to figure out how to play. So I think we can still play better. And I think with the season going on, I think we'll definitely get better with every game. And when we get used to playing with each other and like reading each other's game and so on.
Now, we know that when you left Florida State, you had a short stint out in Germany in the Frauen Bundesliga with Bayern Munich. How important was that period in Germany before you came into the NWSL? Because you learned different skills. The game in Germany is very different. Did that prepare you better, would you say, going into the NWSL? Or do you think that, whereas a lot of players go straight from college into the league, you would have been just as comfortable?
I think, so the environment at Florida State is really good. The coaching staff is great. And what they do like a really good job of is preparing their players for the professional career. So I felt when I left from Florida State that I was ready to play pro. It wouldn't matter if it would be NWSL or in Germany. But I graduated a semester earlier from Florida State, so I stayed there for 3.5 years. And at the time, I felt like I needed to go back to Europe. It was always my dream to play in Germany, and that's like the best league in Europe. So I felt like I had to go back to Europe, see how it is there, and kind of put my name out there. I knew like people knew who I was from college soccer, but no one really knew about me in Europe. So yeah, and I wanted to get better, so I went to Germany to see, and I thought I liked my experience there, like to see how it is, and I like I mean obviously I didn't resign with them even though they gave me a new contract, but I'm happy I went there to see see how everything went, because I think if I would not have gone, I would regret it later. So I'm just happy I went and saw, like, I didn't like it there that much. And like, my experience there kind of, like, pushed me to go back to the U.S. And, yeah, so I was happy I came back. Because after my college career, I always wanted to play both in Bundesliga and WSL. It would just matter which where I would start. So after my experience in Germany, I just knew, I think, and WSL would fit me better.
Yeah, you played 9 games at Munich, didn't you? I think you scored twice mm-hmm. during the period. I watched a few of your games because they are streamed live and we get to see those. You made a good impression and helped the team win the league. I would have thought you would have stayed there a little bit longer, but I guess in your mind, the NWSL was probably the place you always wanted to be.
Yeah, I think so. I think, yeah, and I like my experience there. And maybe I didn't like it enough, so I would resign. But I obviously just stayed there for 6 months. But maybe, like, always deep inside of me, I always thought about I was going to go back to NWSL. And I kind of knew, like, the U.S. culture at the time. So I knew it would be easier for me to adjust to it. Obviously, like, not speaking German, but yeah, maybe, like, deep inside, I kind of knew I would always go back to the U.S.
Did you feel any pressure when you came back to the U.S.? People knew you from your stint at Florida State University. You had a very, very promising college career. If you had entered the NWSL college draft, you were expected to go very high in the draft. You were a finalist in the Mac Herman Trophy. Obviously, Morgan Bryan won that accolade. Did you feel any pressure coming back into the NWSL? Because there are a lot of eyes on you. And when you moved to the Portland Thorns, which is arguably one of the biggest teams in America, not just in America, but probably in the world, mm-hmm. it comes with a lot of pressure.
I think I'm like, with my personality, I just don't think about it. I like playing under pressure and taking responsibility and all that. So no, I just never really thought about it, and no, I did not feel any pressure, I guess.
Well, you've talked about life on the field for Portland. How are you enjoying it off the field? Renowned for being a bit of a hipster town, being a little bit different. How are you settling in? What's some of the weird stuff that you've maybe seen?
Actually, I haven't seen a lot because, I don't know, we just train and then I've been going back to my apartment. what I've been doing in my off time, I've been laying by the pool with my teammates. And yeah, I haven't really done anything, but my dad is coming tomorrow and he will stay for a week, so I guess we'll explore something.
Excellent. Sounds good. We'll have you enjoy the rest of your stay in Portland for however long you stay. Obviously made a very good impression early on. I want to talk a little bit about Iceland as well. Euro 2013 was probably the time when people knew who Dagny Brynjarsdóttir was. And it's interesting that you say earlier about people maybe not knowing much about you over in Europe, because you scored the winning goal for Iceland against Holland in Euro 2013, which took you through to the quarterfinals. You've now got the opportunity potentially to qualify, ironically, for another European Championships in the Netherlands next year in 2017. Top of your group at the moment, you've got Scotland in your group who do have a game in hand. You play Scotland next at the beginning of June. That game is huge. How much are you looking forward to that one?
I'm really excited for the game. I think like all the players, like they look most forward to the biggest games. So that's going to be a really big game for us. This is the first game we play Scotland in the qualification. And obviously they have great players. And I think, yeah, and obviously in the group, it's going to be between us or Scotland who's going to win the group. So we're gonna need to bring our A game to win, but I think we'll have a good chance. The only thing, like with the NWSL, the FIFA days start the day after a game. So the Europeans that play here, we're gonna be late in Europe. So I think, yeah, we like the US national team, they're gonna be gone, I think, on May 27th, but we cannot travel until May 30th. And I think the first qualification games are
3rd of June, yeah. I think you play Scotland.
Yeah, on the 3rd, so I'll be there late. So hopefully, like, with the time difference and all that, I can adjust pretty well.
But you'll be...
Seattle is also going to have players that are flying over, so...
But you'll be kind of used to that in a way, won't you? Because you will have had to travel from Florida when you had Iceland games. Granted, you add a few hours onto the West Coast because it is a slightly longer flight, but... It's maybe something that we take for granted a little bit in Europe, because when you play in Europe, your flight maybe is no more than a couple of hours when you're travelling around for internationals. When you're coming over from the States, you're looking at probably 9, 10, 11 hours.
Yeah, true. And like because we play in Scotland, I think most of the players only have to fly 2 or 3 hours. But I think my flight or like traveling is 15 hours or something. But I'm actually pretty good at adjusting to the time difference, being at Florida State and traveling so much. And even though I live on the West Coast now, I think I'm still pretty good, just because I got used to the how I was supposed to do it on the East Coast. And now I've traveled twice since I came here from the West Coast. So I'm well prepared, so I think it shouldn't be a big deal going to Scotland. It's just like I could have been there when the team gets there. I'll be late, so.
How much inspiration does the women's team take from what the men have done? I don't very often talk about men's football on Women's mm-hmm. Soccer Zone, but the men are going to be participating in France next month. It's the first major tournament that Iceland men team have qualified for. It's a country that doesn't have a huge population. Football is in a good place in Iceland at the moment, isn't it, for both men and women?
Yeah, it's great, and finally they make it too, because women's soccer has been going better and better with every year, and now past 3 years for the men's team has also been growing, and I think that's just really good for such a small country, and hopefully in the future we'll keep improving, and because neither teams have made it to the World Cup, so that's definitely going to be next goal for Iceland, I think, both on the women's and men's side.
Women's Soccer Zone. Follow the show on Twitter at WOSOZone.
So that was Dagny Brynja's daughter rounding off the show. JJ, that brings us to the end of another episode. Hope you enjoyed it, pal, because I've enjoyed this one. I think it's been good fun.
Oh, yeah. Lots of good banter, lots of discussion. Absolutely. Always happy to be on WOSOZone.
Good, man. I always appreciate you coming on, and more so I appreciate the listeners and the time that you guys give. And, of course, if you want to contact us, you can do. We're on Twitter on @WOSOZone. You can listen to the show in two ways. You can listen on iTunes, or you can listen on audioboom.com/channel/WOSOZone. The old website, for some reason, no longer works. Or you can email us on WOSOZone@gmail.com. So we'll be back next week for a UEFA Women's Champions League preview. I will be flying out to Reggio Emilia for the final next Thursday. But we'll be doing a preview before then. So until then, take care of yourselves and bye-bye.